Okay, well, now we're now recording. Before you start back, let me just remind people that Learning in the Shul this week is graciously sponsored by our friends Lonnie and Yoel Wolk this week in memory of Yo's mother, Chana Bela Bas Yoshua. Okay, Doc, before I even get to the questions, you wanted to point something out. Go ahead.
All right, because you had two wonderful questions, but they seem incomplete.
Why is that?
The first question is about the respected doctor in the community. And you left one important thing. You left, is he talking about in shul, or is he talking about like people are walking around on Shabbat? But that makes a big difference, because if he's talking about in shul, that means people aren't wearing their masks. And if they're not wearing the mask, why isn't the shul having a policy? Because that's the law. And then the question should be, should we report this to the authorities? Because, and you're not supposed to report things, or can you? What are the circumstances? So that's one thing that's missing, because if he's talking about in shul, it's one thing. If you're talking about out of shul, it's a different story. So that was one thing that was missing.
Okay.
He hasn't even asked the question yet.
All right.
That's okay. I'm going to add it in now. Go ahead.
All right. On the second question is you have somebody who needs to exercise. He'll keep his, as we get older, if you keep your body active and your mind active, you will either live longer, or if you meant to die in Mishamayim at a certain time, then your quality of life will be a lot, lot better. You'll be sharper, you'll be healthier, your systems in your body are going to work much better. So the question is, what is the person's question about Olat HaShachar and Netzach Hama? Is he a person that always goes to shul and davens with a minyan? And he's talking about, well, he can't do that and head to work, so he'd be davening by himself at home? Or is he saying that I could either daven by myself or do the exercise? So you are missing two key things in each question. That so we can't decide which one we want.
Well, the good news is you're going to be able to, I fully expect us to get to both of them tonight. Okay, that's the good news. But the better news is, before I even asked it, I have two new things to add in. So I'm going to add each one in as we read and make sure that we addressed your points as well, because they're excellent points. So let's just start again at the beginning. Question number one, and actually, I'm pretty sure I know who asked it, right? I am usually a respected medical member of the community. That is, people tend to ask my advice as a medical professional on medical matters and tend to listen. And even now during the pandemic, I regularly remind people about wearing masks and maintaining social distance. And generally people listen to me. However, in the last 6 of the 11 months, perhaps due to COVID exhaustion, people, especially the young ones, are starting to consider me, quote, a nudnik. So am I responsible to keep reminding people of the safety measures, or should I hold back since I'm just going to be called a nudnik when I need to offer medical advice in the future? So Doc says to me, well, wait a second. Does it make a difference, if I may borrow your and reword your comment into a usable question? Does it make a difference where? Does it make a difference where I'm being called, where my advice is being undertaken? For instance, if people are respecting my advice and using me as a sounding board in, say, a school or a shul, right, where there is a law about gatherings indoors, or in people's homes where there's a law about gatherings and people are ignoring those laws, right, versus a situation where people are just walking in the middle of the street and they're just not doing what they're supposed to do, right? And maybe they're standing too close to each other. Maybe in that situation, the rules would be different, or maybe not. And that, we'll add that into the first question. And then question number two, right, which is, my doctors tell me that exercise is good for the body, the mind, and the soul. However, I'm a bit busy, and it seems that the only time I'll be able to get exercise is early in the morning before I go to work. It should be early in the morning before I go to davening and then go to work, right? And in some of our cases, before I go to Daf Yomi and then davening and then go to work, which basically means, you know, quite honestly, I'm getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, but that's a different discussion. So the question is, can I exercise if it's already after Alos HaShachar? What if it's after Nates and I'm going to the later minyan, right? Can I exercise beforehand and then go from there and go off to work? Doc says, well, you have to ask a question, you know, which is how important is that exercise? Today, right? In other words, if it's part of a mitzvah, what difference does it make on the time versus not the time? And also, where am I davening? Which I think is a very important factor. Don't lose that point. Because if I have a minyan, does it make a difference if I'm davening in shul versus davening at home? That may make a difference. And we'll see why. And you'll explain to me why you wanted me to add that in. Now, I believe we're going to get to both questions tonight. But the question is, which order should we go with? Do people prefer me to start with number one or number two? Nudnik or exercise? So Dina's voting number two.
That's fine.
So, all right, we'll start with number two. So that being the case, I'm going to start with Doc's. Before we break it down, Doc gave me one thing to look at. What's that? He says, I have to look at, you know, where I'm davening. Why does that make a difference?
Because davening with a minion enhances everything, just like with Abraham. We were talking about Sdom, if there's 10 or something. For some reason, the tefillot of the minion is better than every individual one by themselves.
So therefore,
it's preferable if it's doable.
So if my minion is at, I don't know, for sake of conversation, let's say I get up at 4:45.
4:30 here.
What?
4:30 here.
Okay, so let's say I get up at 4:30. And I run on the treadmill for, well, no, I can't do, because that's before Alos HaShachar.
Before Alos HaShachar, yes.
I get up at 4:45. And I can get up and get ready and put on my gym clothes, you know, and be ready on the treadmill by 5. Let's assume Alos HaShachar is 5 in the morning, just for the sake of the conversation. And I can run on the treadmill for 20 minutes or do some other strenuous exercise, shredder DVD like somebody may do or somebody's spouse may do, right, for 20 minutes and really build up a sweat. Then jump in the shower and clean myself off. Make it to Daf Yomi by 5:40, right, and learn, and then be there in time for davening with a minion, which will take place at 6:20, 7 o'clock, whatever the case may be. So based on that situation, can I engage in that exercise or not?
Why not?
Okay. Anyone know why not?
In my mind, when a person's body is active, his mind will be sharper and his davening will be better, without a doubt.
I do know
over the time I've been telling people, if they learn nonstop and they're falling asleep and they can't concentrate, stop, do exercise for 20 minutes, half an hour, and then return your learning. And the learning you do then will be much better if you just stay the whole course without the exercise. So being an active body makes a big difference for davening, for learning, and also for health.
There's no question that they say, do you want to add something? Because you're on mute.
No, I just thought that you're not supposed to do too much before you daven.
Oh, so Dina says, wait a second. I thought that there was a person not supposed to do so much before they daven. And Devorah is about to tell me that, yeah, Dina is right. And why is that? Devorah, you remember why? There's a Gemara in Brachos. Yes. The Gemara in Brachos appears on Avidal Ramadal. Where the Gemara tells us in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Rabin, who says that a person is not allowed to do anything before he davens. Before he or she gets up, and then you can't do anything. So the riff and the rush come along, and they have a different girsa, which is why Devorah didn't go with it right away. Because Devorah said, well, that's not the girsa that the riff has and that the rush has. They have a different text. The text says that a person is not allowed to be yotze laderech. They're not allowed to go on the road before you get up and daven. But the Gemara in Brachos earlier, nine blot earlier on Hey Amid Bey, said that Abba Binyamin used to be mitzta'er to daven next to his bed. Mitzta'er usually means he would push himself. Rashi explains he didn't do anything in the morning until he said Kriya Shema by the side of his bed. We're learning Psachim, and on Shabbos we talked about the importance of Kriya Shema, right? And Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso Olam Va'ed, which proves that even on a Thursday night, what, my dear doctor?
It's all connected.
It's all connected. So we see that Rashi reminds us of the same thing. So we see over there also Abba Binyamin was really careful. Now, when you say that Abba Binyamin was careful to do something, it's not so clear that that's a halacha, right? If it was a halacha, what's the big deal that he used to do it, right? You know, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi also said Kriya Shema, so did Rava, so did Abaye, but we don't highlight all of that because the Torah already told us. So when we tell you that somebody's supposed to do something, maybe that's just a good midah, right? So on the one hand, I have a Gemara, which the Riff and the Rush sort of disagree about, but it sounds like Dina said you're not supposed to do too much before davening. And on the other hand, we have a Gemara that seems to suggest that it's a midah tova. It's a nice idea, but maybe that midah tova is only a minhag. So when this issue is brought up in the Shulchan Aruch is a little bit machmir. And the Shulchan Aruch says that the reason could be one of two reasons. Either one. Well, one second. If I told you you couldn't exercise before davening, right? What would be the reason for that? I'm feeding you, Dina. I'm telling you you're right. What would be the reason? Doc, Devorah, anyone?
What a pacifier. Because the first thing you have to do when you get up is to daven.
Why? What are the possibilities? What do people think?
Because you gotta, because you have to do zriza to the mitzvot, and the mitzvot.
So the Gemara. Daven. Okay, so one possibility, and this the Gemara also says on a different Gemara in Brachos on Daf Yud Amud Beis, the Gemara says that it's improper for somebody to take care of his or her needs first, and then to daven. It's just a lack of respect. The first thing you do in the morning is you daven, right? And so that looks like gaiva. It looks like you're not interested in God. You like casting him aside. So that's one possibility. What's the most obvious reason why you shouldn't get involved in other things before you daven?
Well, you might forget to daven.
And that's the other reason. And where do we learn that? What other instances do we see that?
Things you're not supposed to do before mincha.
Very good. Gemara Shabbos Daf Tes Amud Beis. Excellent. Where the Gemara says, Samach Lamincha, which is relevant to us because we're learning all about the Karban HaTamid now, which was for Bein Harbayim. So Samach Lamincha we also pay attention to, right? And again, proving that, what, my dear doc? Oh, yeah, it's still connected. The other possibility, other than just the sense of haughtiness, is the sense that you have Devora that you've highlighted that, well, wait, you may get so involved in what you're doing that you're going to forget. And the Rambam, when he discusses this issue in Hilchos Tefillah in Perek Vav, Halacha Dalid, he notes that in the morning you can't eat anything until after you daven. And he says that's like working before davening. And why is that? So the Rambam seems to suggest it just shows a lack of respect to God, sort of like what, you know, we had suggested as the first possibility. But in the next halacha, Perek Vav Halacha Hey, when he talks about mincha, he says, well, you can do some sort of eating. It's called te'ima, tasting, which is going to be relevant to us when we start discussing Megillah leaning, especially this year, right? Versus something called achila, or eating, right? Te'ima, you can taste, but achila, which is a little bit more formal, where you sit down and have a full meal. So we say that a person shouldn't do. And why? Because of what the Rambam says, Shema Yimashich. He may become so involved in the eating, he's going to forget to actually get up and say Kriya Shema in its right time and to say Tefillah in the right time. I believe secretly this may be why Kiddush clubs don't begin until much, much later, right? That way they're sure that the people got in the Shema and the Shmona Esrei on positive, tongue in cheek, that that's why they wait until the Haftorah, right? But joking aside, kidding aside, the idea that that we have that concern is going to play a certain role this year. You know, with all the different needs in the different communities, you know, to make sure that everyone has a chance to hear Megillah, especially in communities where there's restrictions, the governmental restrictions for gatherings are very, very limited. There are a lot of shuls that don't have enough people know how to read Megillah, but have very large congregations. So on a regular year, their main sanctuaries may hold 700-800 people. This year, those sanctuaries can hold 25, maybe 100, you know, depending on where you are in the country, right? Now, what do you do? So one of the things that rabbis around the country were discussing this week is doing what many of us have been doing for years, which is have multiple Megillah leanings. Well, you know, I have to tell you, most years I wind up reading Megillah somewhere in the shul in the neighborhood of 9:45 and 10 o'clock, right, in the evening. Now, I've already heard Megillah, but some of the people coming are mommies, and they had not heard Megillah yet. That's why we have a later Megillah leaning, right? Those women have been fasting all day, Tanis Esther. They can't eat until after Megillah? That's crazy. You know, why should we make them fast? It's Tanis Esther. They have to keep it till 10 o'clock at night? It's off the wall. So we're discussing this with Mori Varabi this week with Rosh Hashanah. He looked at us like we had three horns in the middle of our heads. And he said, I don't understand. There's a difference between Te'ima and Achila. Yeah, we don't want a person sitting down and eating a full meal. But to say that they should, sure, have a coffee, have a Danish, have a something, just to tide you over till you get back to the shul, so you can hear the Megillah also. But to say that, and the same thing would be true over here as well. The Aruch HaShulchan, in Aruch Chaim Siman Pei Tes Sif Chav, also makes this distinction between Te'ima and Achila, and he says, it would follow that any malacha that's not something that looks like disdain for Hashem, that you're putting God lower on the priority list, can be done, as long as you are careful to make sure shalo yimashich. And this is the position that the Mishnah Berurah quotes as well in Siman Pei Tes Sefkat Yud Ches, and in the Shavuos Yaakov in Chelek Beis Siman Chaf Hey. So therefore, if we put this into a mindset about our question about the exercise, we would be able to come ahead and ask a question. I talked to somebody in the last 2-3 weeks that I haven't spoken to regularly in the last 15 years. Just happens to be a person that, 17 years, that as somebody who I was extremely close with 17 years ago, very, very close with. And over time, you know, there's a huge, huge gap between us, both a distance gap and also an age gap. And so, you know, we haven't been speaking as often as we used to. Out of the blue, for different communal reasons, I wound up talking to him quite a number of times. And I asked him, you know, I said to him with all due respect, are you still on your same regimen? That's how this question started for me. He says, what do you mean? I used to learn with this fellow in my old shul every morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, before Shabbos. And before he came to shul for the 7 o'clock chakras, he used to tell me that he used to run on the treadmill for an hour. Then he would get dressed, he would shower, get dressed, put on a suit, and then he would come to shul and learn with me. So, and while he was on the treadmill, that was his Tehillim time. So you would say Tehillim for 45, I don't say Tehillim 45 minutes a day, on the treadmill or off the treadmill, right? I'm embarrassed to say it or whatever, but he had a whole regimen of Tehillim 45 minutes every day. So I asked him, right, he's still saying Tehillim. He says, am I still alive? Why should I stop saying Tehillim? Right? And I said, are you still running on the treadmill? He says, maybe not as fast as I did 17 years ago. But notwithstanding, that's the way things go. So I never asked him then. But it happened to be that I was in brief conversation with Rav Yosef Rimon. Rav Rimon is a tremendous, tremendous person. You'll start to hear his name more often in these shiurim since I started to develop a relationship with him. Rav Rimon is the Rav of Machon Lev. He's the Rav of Alon Shvut South, and a tremendous, well-recognized Talmud Chacham. You've probably seen a lot of his writing Yeah, it's been pushed in a lot of communities. He's a very, very wonderful Talmud Chacham. I had sent him a question on behalf of this group a couple of weeks ago in preparation for the Chabur about cutting the line. And I thought he forgot my question because by the time we gave the shiur, he hadn't gotten back to me. Well, not a week ago Monday, so a week from this past Monday, I had gotten an email from him with a 4-page tshuva. It was so wonderful. Then I got a note from somebody else who asked me, would you mind translating the tshuva, which I did. And last Friday in the Mizrahi email, they sent out the tshuva from Rav Rimon. Secretly, I am the Yehonatan Schwartz who is in there, and I'm also the guy who wrote the translation. So all the mistakes are mine, right? So Rav Rimon, someone else turned around and said, this was supposed to be one of about 20 tshuvas that Rav Rimon had answered that week, and it became one of one that got translated that week, right? I'm sure you'll start to see many more of them very soon. But all pieces included, this tshuva had also come into play, right? This discussion about this tshuva, that someone else had asked him. And I found myself thinking, oh, that's so funny. I was just working through this because I had bumped into this other fellow. So Rav Rimon says, listen to the Gemara. The Gemara says that a person is not allowed to do that which he wants. So Rav Rimon says, if your doctor tells you to exercise, that's not chapotzecha. That's chapzei. Like Dr. Mendel was saying. If your doctor tells you to do this, and it's for your brios, it's for your health. So Rav Rimon said, I think, not that this was his full-fledged proof, but he says, it's a sniff, it's a piece to be included. I think he would say that would be 100% okay. So then I started to think, and so did he, of all sorts of things that can be done before davening if there's a necessity. So Rav Rimon offered the following. First of all, he says, anything that's called a tzorach shamayim. Why are we allowed to learn daf yomi before davening? We shouldn't be allowed to have a daf yomi shiur. Ever think about that? Maybe we should have daven first and then the daf yomi. So the Gemara Megillah on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph says that, let's say a person has to make Ochel Nefesh meal. So the Gemara says, on Yantef, we start davening late so that people can prepare the food beforehand. So Rabbi Yashiv and Shut Divrei Chachamim and Rabbi Chaim Ben Scheinberg in the back of the Tefillah Kelchos and others use that clause to say that you can go running before, exercise a little before davening, because you're doing it for Brias HaNefesh. Rav Scheinberg says it would be better if you could wait, but quite honestly, it's mutter. If it enhances tefillah, something that you would do to enhance tefillah, brushing your teeth on behalf of the other people in the world who are standing around you for davening, please brush your teeth before davening, especially if you're unmasked. And why is that? Because again, it's a tzorach ha-tefillah. Shaving, taking a shower, Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted in Shas Tshuvas Divrei Chachamim Volume 1, and in the Shas Tshuvas Az Nidberu, the 6th volume, number 43, both bring down in Rav Moshe's name that you can take a shower or shave before davening. I remember many years ago we were sitting in a shiur with Rav Schachter, and he said, look, he had a number of reasons why he thought maybe it would be better if you didn't rush to take the shower first thing in the morning. But I think that, if it was a necessity for tefillah, right? Even Rav Schachter would agree. Things that don't require effort. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has in the back of the Tefillah Kelvosa, he says that if you want to steal a glance at the newspaper, just the front page, he says that that's okay. Or let's say, for instance, Mondays and Thursdays, before I leave to shul, if I remember, I pull the garbage can out of the garage and I bring it to the front of the house. These are things that don't require effort. And so therefore, they're not considered something that can't be done before davening. The most obvious thing is the one that Dvorah, I'm surprised you didn't mention. And Doc, I thought this was the thing I thought you were going to mention, which is that if you set a reminder. Right. And that's what I thought you were saying. If you're going to shul, and you know you daven in a minyan kavua, I daven at 6:20 every day. I'm not going to allow 6:20 to go by and not go to shul. Go ask my wife. If it's the time for shul, that's it. Right? That's it, you know. So if you have some sort of reminder set, right, the world can come to an end. But we're, you know, so that would also be another example. And also, the Rama says that maybe if you've already started davening, right, so say some brachas beforehand. Say brachas at Torah, say brachas at Shachar, make a little karbanos, right? Then you're no longer putting God on the bottom of the priority list. He's been addressed. Oh, you haven't finished everything? That's fine. But, you know, under those circumstances, there's no reason why a person would not be allowed to exercise or shower or shave. For those who wear tefillin in the morning, I have another reason why a person might want to make sure that they don't shower right beforehand. It's not good for the tefillin. But you know what? If you're getting up in the morning and you're exercising, and then you're going to the daf, and you're a little bit thin on top, you really shouldn't have a problem. By the time it comes time to put on your tefillin, you're probably not going to have much of a problem with the tefillin, with the moisture, right? And so therefore, the fragrant, hope that you'll use guile and wish that everybody else did too, as the old slogan is, right, it would come into play. So in short, can a person do exercise? The answer is absolutely. Should a person do exercise every day? I have a rule, which is I try very hard not to say an answer if I'm not going to live by it personally. I should try to live by it. So I'll let Doc answer. Should a person exercise every day, Doc?
Yes.
Done. Right? And I'm taking that as a serious musa. Right? But should a person do it before davening? Maybe if you can make time after, it would be better. Maybe if you could start a little bit of davening beforehand, say Mogadani, say some of the Haskalah of davening, maybe some of the Birchos HaShachar, right? But otherwise, yeah. You know, as long as you're careful, especially, Doc, if you set you daven with a minion, right? And you know you don't miss that minion, you really don't have too much to have to worry about. And that's question number two. Let's back up the truck to question number one. Okay? It's not a very long question. With your deference, I'd like to do it. And here it is. I'm usually a well-respected medical member of the community. That is, people tend to ask my advice as a medical professional in medical areas, and they tend to listen. And even now, during the pandemic, I regularly remind people about wearing masks and maintaining social distance. Generally, people used to listen to me. However, in the last six of the 11 months, perhaps due to COVID exhaustion, people, especially the young ones, are starting to consider me a nudnik. So am I responsible to keep reminding people of the safety measures? Or should I hold back since I'm just going to be called nudnik when I need to offer medical advice in the future? So Doc says, please, if I'm going to address this, right, I should also ask, where the person or the people are, because
location.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the easier part of the question, and then ask you to fill in the gap. Doc says it may make a difference between being in a shul or a school where there are rules and there are governmental rules, and you know we certainly have identified quite a bit in a number of the different shiurim we offer the dina de malchusa dina, which Moshe knows very, very, very much more so than perhaps the rest of us, right? That the law of the land is the law, certainly if it doesn't conflict with Torah, and nobody can argue that the responsibility to wear a mask or the responsibility to maintain a healthy social distance is not in conflict with the Torah, right? So therefore, I think in that regard, if a person... And unfortunately, this has happened in a number of shuls, where somebody comes in and says, we don't wear masks where I come from. Okay, then get out of my building, right? Get out of our shul building, because we're not mechuyev to close the shuls down in New York or New Jersey or California or Illinois because you decided to plop yourself down and go against the din and the malchusa. I think that that doesn't make you a nunnik. I think that makes you a law-abiding citizen. That said, right? What about the people in the street? What would you say in those circumstances, Doc?
Well, there's a couple of things. First thing, you do have responsibility at least once to mention it to them.
Right.
And if they're not going to listen to you anyway, when one does an Avera, you're not supposed to repeat it if you know you're not going to change their behavior.
So you're working off this idea, right? Does it make a difference if it's Joe Schmo or a well-respected doctor for whom people generally listen?
I think it's equal obligation to mention them at least once.
Right.
Whether it's Joe Schmo or it's the respected doctor.
Right.
But if he sees he's not succeeding, then he should make sure he wears a mask and keep his distance from them. And make sure he tells everybody he knows that wears a mask to keep the distance from them.
Even the well-respected doctor, in your opinion, has a gvul. There's a certain point where he's not obligated to say anything.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because it's not going to change their behavior.
Okay. So there is a Gemara. The Gemara is in Bav Metzia, and you just referenced it. The Gemara in Bav Metzia appears on Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. And the Gemara says, Hocheach tochiach es amisecha afilu mea pamim. Even if it's going to be 100 times. And the Altar of Kelm, in the Sefer Chochmah Musar, Volume 1, page 87, asks the obvious question, why are you being mochiach 100 times? It obviously means between time 2 and time 99, the people didn't listen, right? And why do we not apply the rule that Dr. Wenger just offered? Kishem, in the same way that it's a mitzvah to say things that are going to be heard, it's also a mitzvah to not say things that won't be listened to. Unless that's exactly what our case is all about. See, when you know people aren't going to listen to you, then what's the point in bringing it up? You're just going to cause machlokes. You're going to cause disruption. There's no value and no point. But what happens in a situation where people essentially agree with you, but they tend to forget? In other words, you're right. There are some Fabrenta individuals who say, I will never keep Shabbos. So running after them and screaming, Shabbos, Shabbos, and throwing rocks at their cars, right, is silly and foolish because all they get out of that is anger. But if you're around other people who don't know from Shabbos or who want to keep Shabbos, but they're feeling a pressure, and you go up to them and say, you know, Shabbos is really beautiful, and we really want you to come and keep a Shabbos. Please come and spend with us a Shabbos, I think is the beginning of a line. We wait so anxiously for it to begin, right? I think the Miami Boys Choir will sing to that. If I can't be in Miami, I can be with them in the choir, right? So if they don't know any better and you can bring it to them and you can encourage, so then maybe they'll come around. In other words, if somebody normally would listen to you and just they're fatigued, so you have to remind them because maybe this time they won't be fatigued. And if it takes 100 times, suggests the Altar of Kelim, then you have a responsible. If the person's not interested, then saying something more than once is silly, just like Dr. Wenger offered. So Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlow. Who is Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlow? There is a famous work that was not as famous until Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlow wrote his commentary on it. It was called the Sefer HaMitzvos LaRasag. It was the Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sajigon. Probably would have been banished to the Sfarim shelves because it's a nice work, but it's not a terribly long work. And then Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perla wrote this massive, massive commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvos LaRasag. And he took this small book and turned it into three massive volumes, right? Because the commentary is huge, right? And so he turns around and he in his commentary to Mitzvos Asei Chavches, he asks, I don't understand. If you have a responsibility to say something, it's a violation of Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha to not give Musar, right? So then why do you need a Mitzvos Asei of Hocheach Tochiach? If somebody else is going to do something wrong, you have a mitzvah to stop him. Don't stand idly by on your brother's blood. So why did you need a mitzvah saseh? So he answers, Lo samod is a mitzvah only when you know that the person is going to listen to you. But if you're not sure, you might not be obligated to push him. That's why the Torah says, no, hocheach tochiach. Even if he doesn't listen to you, you'd still need to be mochiach up to 100 times, even if it means you'll be a nudnik, just to cover the chance that this time he'll listen. So, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein was asked this question by somebody who I think I know. I think I know the person who asked the question. I feel bad. He lives in a very, very difficult community that I, for the sake of the conversation, will say is COVID fatigued, right? Especially among the youngsters. He's cut videos. He's cut other things. He's had a very rough time. I'm not sure that it's the same person, but I'm going to guess. And if it's not, it could equally as apply to him. So Rav Zilberstein says, I don't understand. It's better for you to be called a nudnik now, right? And worry about next time that they're not going to listen to you next time. We'll get to that next time. But right now you have a shred of credibility. When the people get sick, who do you think they're going to call? Ghostbusters, right? They're going to call you. So therefore you still have a shred of a possibility of getting through. Yes. If it's, you know, it's hilarious to me. The yeshiva week began today, yesterday. So, you know, we have a number of people. One of the things I have to say is absolutely wonderful and beautiful is that even in people who perhaps are used to keeping a different level of observance of COVID rules will call me or will come into the building for Shacharis and automatically they will follow through. Probably 999 times out of 1,000, right? Either I'll get a call or Scott will get a call or Alana Adams will get a call. Just, what's our policy? What can we do? What can happen? And without a doubt, all shapes and stripes, Hasidim, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Litvisher, old, young, whatever, they come into shul. We screen them before or we screen them in a moment. And everyone comes in a mask, right? No ifs, ands, or buts. And I've had people tell me, but I have antibodies. I don't need a mask, right? No one are sure. You know, okay, when we will wear a mask. No question, right? No question. Every now and then you meet like somebody comes in. It happened today. And I prepared the questions. You all saw the questions yesterday. What happened today? A guy comes up to me and we had a minion for the boys, you know, and this guy came by and wanted to join the minion. So I said, sure. We screened him on the spot. He passed the screening. I told him, you got to wear a mask, though. You can't come into the building without a mask. I'm happy to give you one. I went to get him a mask. So he says to me, you know, maybe we may be in violation of Chukos HaGoyim, right, to wear the mask for Tila. I think he picked on the wrong guy. Right, so I said to him, you know, you don't have to come if you don't want to. But I have to tell you, I don't think listening to Gedolei Yisrael is Chukos HaGoyim. So he says, what are you talking about? I said, there's no Gadol be Yisrael, not one Gadol be Yisrael who says that you can get away without wearing masks. So the guy stopped and he says, I know a lot of Gedolim. I said, name one. He says, they're not going to go on record. I said, then they don't exist. I said, because Reb Chaim Kanievsky in Bnei Brak told people to wear masks, right? And the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah in Israel and the Moetzes Chachmei HaTorah and the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah in America and the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan and Rav Asher Weiss begins every single shir, reminding people, I said, to call that glucose a goyim, I said, I have to tell you, I'm very surprised. I've never heard somebody, come by and accuse something that all the gedolim have come together on, and being chukos agoyim. He says, "Oh, I was just joking, right?" And so I was agile. I said, "That's fine. I don't think that certain things are a joking matter, but okay. Maybe you just need to have a little bit more safety because, after all, the rates are high the way they are." But I said, you have to follow through. And he said, "Okay, he understands." But I'm told today one of our members is out of town, and he called me in a panic. What do I do? I'm in a place where the only makeshift minion, because the place where I am, the regular people don't want outsiders to come in. I said, okay. He says, so the only minion is a minion of people who, if I was davening with the regular people, I also wouldn't want them to come in. Yeah, no social distance. The people have no masks. They're not following through. He says, what do I do? I said, I don't think you should down with the minion. He says, well, I said, I don't think you should down with the minion. If it's not a safe minion, then why are you getting over there? Well, what's the point? So I think, to a certain degree, a person has a responsibility not to be a nudnik, right? Except where being a nudnik counts. So, Dr. Wenger, I think your distinction before was an important one. And what was that? It depends who you are. If it's somebody who is going to be listened to, then he has a responsibility even 100 times. But it's the 100th time the person says, oh, you're right, you know what? Even this guy who stopped me with the hobachukos saying, no, I'm going to wear the mask, not a shayla. I was kibitzing. Okay, I don't know what he did for mincha. Maybe daven mincha in a place where he's not. And maybe he's going to think about it twice. I don't know. But our responsibility is to realize that we call Yisrael Arevim Zelazah. And if somebody will benefit because, it's a lapse in judgment and you're able to go ahead and make an impression, yeah, you have a responsibility to do that. And it's not only true for COVID, it's true for Torah mitzvahs, right? All of them, not just the ones that are based on Dina de Malchusa. We have a responsibility, and sometimes people don't appreciate it. So you have a responsibility to let people know. Sometimes, you see the little kids are playing with the grass on Shabbos, and sometimes they pluck at it. So, we were running the ISIS program over the summer. One of the things that happened was, dear friends, there you have another week where we've covered the entire set of questions, and we can go back to our vacation schedule and enjoy. And Be'ezras Hashem, next time we won't talk about the Miami Boys Choir. We'll have the opportunity to remember where they started. And more importantly, Be'ezras Hashem, we too will have the opportunity to celebrate not one, but many Shabbos Yerushalayims. Everyone have a wonderful, terrific Shabbos, and stay safe. And the best way to stay safe is be a nudnik to yourself.
What's the picture?
Huh?
What's the picture, Moshe?
It's our skiing picture. Thank you. Yeah, have a good Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.